Outsiders, insiders. I am a great booster of the Brotherhood of Science Fiction. I wrote an editorial on the subject with just that title in the fifth issue of Isaac Asimov Science Fiction Magazine, January to February 1978. I delight in thinking of us, ardent writers and readers of science fiction, as a band of brothers, and sisters, of course, fond of each other and supporting each other. Unfortunately, there are aspects of such a situation that are not entirely delightful. Let's consider these unfavourable aspects, because if the field of science fiction is to remain as ideal as we all want it to, we have to see the dangers. We may not be able to defeat those dangers even if we see them, but we certainly can't if we don't see them. For instance, if we are truly a small and intimate band, as I remember us being in the golden age of Campbell, though perhaps that may be only the consequence of nostalgia, then there is a danger that we might close our ranks, unfairly and petty-mindedly, against outsiders. I remember, for instance, when Michael Crichton wrote The Andromeda Strain, and it hit the bestseller lists. In those days, it had not yet become common for science fiction and fantasy to be actual bestsellers, and here was an outsider who had accomplished it. What made him an outsider? Well, he hadn't sold to the magazines. He didn't show up at conventions. He wasn't one of us. There followed reviews in various science fiction prozines and fanzines, and it seemed to me at the time that they were uniformly unfavourable. I can't judge how justified those reviews might have been, for I never read the book, perhaps because I too felt he was an outsider. But there did appear, in my opinion, an extra helping of venom beyond what I usually notice in unfavourable reviews. Was that fair? No, it wasn't. Crichton, a person of great talent, went on to be very successful both in his later books, some of them not science fiction, and in movies as well. Our objections to him did not hurt him, and he doesn't need us. In retrospect, we might conclude that some of us were petty. Or am I trying to preach from some high moral position, implying that I am myself above such things? Not at all. I went through a period soon after World War II in which I reacted badly, though entirely within myself, and I look back on that period in shame. When one is part of a small and comparatively insignificant clique, warming one's self in its closeness and camaraderie, what happens if one of the cliques suddenly rises and becomes famous in the wild world outside? Thus, in the 1940s, Robert Heinlein was quickly accepted as the best science fiction writer of us all, and in the opinion of many, he still is the Grand Master. And I accepted that too. I was not envious, for I was just a beginner, and I knew that many writers were better than I was. Besides, I liked Bob's writing a great deal, and most of all, he was one of us, writing for the same magazines, going to the same conventions, corresponding with us, first naming me, and expecting me to first name him, and so on. But then, soon after World War II, Bob Heinlein was involved with a motion picture, Destination Moon. It wasn't a very good motion picture. It didn't make the hit that the later 2001 A Space Odyssey or Star Wars did. But it was the first motion picture involving one of us. And while I said not a word, I was secretly unhappy. Bob had left our group and become famous in the land of the infidels. To make it worse, he had published The Green Hills of Earth in the Saturday Evening Post, and it had created a stir. It was a real science fiction story, and it was in the slicks. Not only in the slicks, but in the greatest and slickest slick of them all. We all dreamed of publishing in the SEP, I also. But that was like dreaming of taking out Marilyn Monroe on a date. You knew it was just a dream, and you had no intention of even trying to make it come true. And now Bob had done it. He hadn't just tried. He'd done it. I don't know whether I simply mourned his loss because I thought that now he would never come back to us, or whether I was simply and greenly envious. All I knew was that I felt more and more uncomfortable. It was like having a stomachache in the mind, and it seemed to spoil all my fun in being a science fiction writer. So I argued it out with myself, not because I am a noble person, but because I hated feeling the way I did, and I wanted to feel better. I said to myself that Bob had blazed new trails, and that it didn't matter who did it as long as it was done. Those new trails had been opened not for Robert Heinlein, but for science fiction, and all of us who were in the business of writing or reading science fiction could be grateful and thankful, for we would sooner or later experience the benefit of Bob's pioneering. And that was true. Because Bob made science fiction look good to people who did not ordinarily read science fiction, and who despised it when they thought of it at all. It became more possible for the rest of us to have our stuff published outside the genre magazines, even in the SCP. I had a two-part serial published in that magazine myself eventually, but that was when it was long past its great days. The result of my working this out meant I was free of sickness on later occasions. When my first book, Pebble in the Sky, appeared under the Doubleday imprint, it was followed in a matter of months by The Martian Chronicles by Ray Bradbury. I don't have to tell you that Ray's book far outshone mine. It didn't bother me, for it seemed to me that the better Ray's book did, the more people would read science fiction in book form, and some of them would be sure to look for more of the same, and stumble over mine. And they did. Pebble is still earning money, 36 years later. And however annoying it might be that Michael Crichton could enter our field straight out of medical school, move right up to the novel level and land on the bestseller list, and have everyone drooling over him, where's the harm? He did it. Unintentionally, perhaps, for us. He added to the respectability of science fiction among those who found us unrespectable, and made it easier for the rest of us to get onto the bestseller list occasionally. Far from snarling, we should have been cheering. Another point. A band of brothers and sisters is at its best when there is nothing much to compete for. As long as we were all getting no more than 1 and 2 cents a word, and we did in that wonderful golden age of Campbell, with no chance at book publication, foreign sales, and movies, as long as the only kudos we could get was first place in the analytical laboratory, which meant a half-cent a word bonus, as long as no one outside our small field had ever heard of any of us under any circumstances, what was there to compete over? The most successful of us were almost as permanently impecunious as the least so, so there was no reason to snarl and bite. Now, however, times have changed. There are many more of us. Some of us write bestsellers. In fact, the greatest bestseller of the 1980s, Stephen King, is, after a fashion, one of us. It's no longer a few thousand bucks that's at stake. It's a few million. And that brother bit fades, bends, and crumples under the strain. I don't write reviews, but I do read them, and I'm beginning to see the venom again as one writer discusses the work of another member of the Brotherhood. What's more, the annual award of the Nebulas, which are determined by vote among the members of the Science Fiction Writers of America, seems to rouse hard feeling and contentiousness every year. The stakes are simply too high. Thus, a young member of the Brotherhood, to me he seemed a child, complained to me the other day that the young writers, young to him, were ferocious in their competitiveness. There was none of the friendliness, he said, that there was in our day, meaning his and mine, I suppose, though I was a published writer when he was born. I suppose he's right, though. In a way, I can't ache to return to the good old days when we were all impoverished together. It seems a glamorous time in my mind now, but I remember Sophie Tucker's immortal dictum, I've tried poor, and I've tried rich, and rich is better. But is there a price we must pay for it? Must the camaraderie be gone? Must the friendly back and forth be over? Why not remember that science fiction is still a relatively specialized field? That SF writers have to know a great deal more and develop more unusual skill than ordinary writers. That SF readers, too, demand more because they need more. Can we remember that we're all in this together? That those in front pave the way for those behind? That at any time someone can appear from the strange land of outside, or the stranger land of youth, and carve out new territory for us all, and that they should be welcomed gladly? Let's be friends. There are endless worlds of the mind and emotions to conquer, and we can advance more surely if we support, not fight, each other.